This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about lardo.
Yes, which, if, was there any reason it was on your mind?
Oh, wow.
I love how this question always catches you off guard. I never expected such a question.
I think what had happened was I was looking for some kind of protein-related product in, like, the grand scheme of episode topics, and I was sort of looking at different kinds of charcuterie, and I kind of, like, glanced across lardo on a list of things, and I was like, what is up with lardo? Let's look into that one. Because I've definitely I've definitely had it before on various, like, meat and cheese board kind of things. Love the stuff. It's super delicious. Always feels a little bit off-putting to just eat, like, straight fat. But it's so good. And in describing to friends, like, what this episode was going to be about, they were like, well, where do we go get some? And I was like, heck, I'm not sure right now. It can be a little bit elusive. So
the elusive lardo.
Yeah.
That could be a character on the Dunker. We haven't.
Yes.
We need to bring back the Dunker.
Oh, heck, we do. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've had it. I definitely did not know what you were talking about when you suggested it.
Okay.
Terms, at least. I didn't know what that meant. It's possible I've had it on a cheese plate or something before, but probably not.
Okay. I feel like you might remember it, but I don't know.
I do like fat.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with my friend about this, and I think we're going to talk about this more towards the end because, as we've discussed in several episodes, fat has been the subject of many conflicting health reports.
Oh, yeah.
Some more reputable than others. But I've always liked it. I thought it was bad, so I cut it off for a long time, and now I don't do that anymore. My friend will not eat it because she says the texture is off.
Okay.
She's also influenced by the health stuff, but she says the texture is what's really gets her. When I was reading descriptions of what this is like, I feel like I can imagine this texture and that I would really like it. She would not like it, but I think I would really like it.
if I'm eating like a steak or like a pork chop or something like that, I'll usually trim off the fat and not eat it unless it's like a little thin, like a very small amount. And maybe a little bit like cooked down. But this is a different situation. This is a different texture.
I'll have to get some too, so let me know if you find out.
Oh yeah.
Where some is available. But I guess that does bring us to our question.
Sure.
Lardo. What is it?
Well, lardo is a type of preserved meat product that is actually entirely or almost entirely fat. It's a big old block of pork fat that is cured in salt, herbs, and spices until it's creamy, not greasy, dense and silky in texture, and delicately sweet, savory, herbal, maybe spiced in flavor. It might have like a thin vein almost of pinkish red meat running through it, and sort of the opposite of bacon or a steak, but it might just be a long block of solid white to pinkish fat, with or without a crust of salt and herbs on top. You typically slice it super thin, and serve it as you would any type of salumi or charcuterie, or maybe as a garnish or an ingredient in relatively delicate, hot or cold savory dishes where the flavor and texture can shine through. It sort of melts in your mouth with maybe just a little bit of a hint of a chew. It's like herbal pig butter. It's like prosciutto without the meat. It's like a dream that you had of a bright mountain day that just melts away.
It's beautiful. You should write commercials. They need to contact you, but only if you can still do this too.
Yeah, absolutely. I would not give this up. Don't worry.
Okay, good. That sounds amazing.
I mean, you know, your mileage may vary depending on whether or not you enjoy fat, whether or not you eat pork, but yeah, yeah. okay, a few different cultures, I should say, have some kind of preserved fatback product, because this is the fatback part of the pig. But today we are talking about the Italian versions. Others tend to be smoked. Lardo definitely is not. Which goes into the deeper preservation of many kinds of animal products, which we have talked about on the show before. What have we talked about before? Now I don't remember at all.
It's sausage, maybe.
Yeah, boudin. Bacon. Something. Bacon. Yeah, sure. I don't know. Oh, yeah, y'all probably know better than we do. Okay, so lardo, the cut of meat, or in this case, the cut of fat. All right, let's take a step back from that, actually, and say that different breeds of pigs have been developed for different qualities, right? You know, most have been developed for being bigger and more muscular and leaner, you know, that is, producing more meat. These are sometimes called bacon breeds. More rare these days are lard breeds, which are smaller, stouter, slower growing, with more fat. Pot-bellied pigs, by the way, are this kind, although I'm not suggesting that anyone eat their treasured pet. I mean, unless that's really what you're into, I can't tell you what to do. Okay. There are crossbreeds and in-betweeners between bacon and lard types, but yeah. So for lardo, you're looking to take a lard type of pig and get the fat back off of it, the sort of cap of fat that they grow along their backs and partially down their sides. Although this is often considered a byproduct, like something that you would trim off and discard while taking out the loin that's right below it, in this case, the fat back is what you're going for. You want it to be at least an inch thick, and you're going to cut it into rectangular slabs, at which point you cure it. So sea salt is going to be your operative ingredient, but after that, you might have a simple blend of garlic and rosemary chopped up, or maybe some other herbs and spices like sage, thyme, oregano, black pepper, juniper, anise, fennel seeds, coriander, cloves, nutmeg, cinnamon. I've seen all kinds of things go into the dry brine for this. So when you pack it onto the fat, the salt will slowly draw water out and allow some of those flavor molecules from the herbs and spices to be drawn in. The resulting wet brine around the fat back prevents unfriendly microbes from growing. Traditionally, you might stack multiple slabs up in your curing vessel with layers of, you know, salt and stuff in between. Which brings us to the curing vessel. So in some places, specific types of marble are traditional. You can cure lardo in these during the cooler months in parts of Italy where it's from. That's around like September to May. In other places, the traditional curing vessels are wooden boxes or tubs. I think chestnut or oak are the traditional types of wood used for that. However, you can also do this with like a Ziploc bag sealed in the back of your fridge. Some recipes alternately have you air cure it in like a curing chamber instead of allowing that brine to form, which is more traditional for other types of salumi. You know, as with any curing project, this is a personal process for every single human who is doing it. So your results may vary. You do what you like. But whatever you're doing, you're going to wait for it to do for like 6 months to 2 years. You might go in and like redistribute and or add to the salt and herbs once in a while to make sure that the lard is coated. When you're ready to finish it, you might hang it to dry in a cool cellar or like let it rack dry in your fridge. During all of this, you are going to want to, if you're making it at home, by the way, use opaque containers in order to keep light from getting in order to keep it from yellowing. Yeah, totally. Oh. But yeah, once it's done, it's white, like marble white to kind of pinkish in color, and often just cut off in paper thin slices as part of a like snack or appetizer, or like meat and cheese board kind of situation, with accompaniments like toasted bread, roasted nuts, olives, slices of melon, maybe some fig or fig preserves, drizzle of honey. It can also be incorporated into sauces or soups or as a substitute for other types of fats, or maybe sliced thin as a garnish on top of either hot or cold dishes. Or you could put little slices of it in amongst casserole layers or roasting vegetables. Maybe wrap some around a date and then grill it until it just starts to go translucent to maybe a little bit of curly brown around the edges. Maybe wrap it around something relatively quick cooking like asparagus or shrimp or scallops and go ahead and grill it. I don't know. Apparently, in one of the areas where it's from, a popular deli sandwich is just like thick slices of tomato and thin slices of lardo on like crispy baguette style bread. It sounds so good.
It sounds so good. It is so versatile. Like, I was reading all of these things and I never thought about it. But when I read it, I was like, that's delicious. So, two things. When you said date and grill it until it just starts to go translucent to brown, because I've seen so many horror movies, I was like, oh, like Midsommar on the menu.
No,
sure.
don't take your don't take your human partner and wrap them. I mean, again, I can't really tell you what to do.
Maybe strongly advise you not to do that.
You probably don't cook them. I don't think that's legally advisable.
We are not lawyers though, so don't
doctors nor lawyers.
No.
Oh, heck.
But also, yeah, I do love how many accounts I was reading of it was like, just try it. Try it as a topping. Try it as a, like, just add it to this, add it to that.
Yeah.
So you usually do pretty small amounts. So I would love to hear from listeners what you've made with this or had with this.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. I need to know all about it.
Mm-hmm. I do too. But I guess that brings us to the nutrition.
Okay. So this is a nutritionally dense food. That being said, raw lard by itself, before you do this curing process to turn it into what we are terming here lardo, raw lard is actually made up of about 50% monounsaturated fats, like one of the good kinds of fats, like one of the fats in olive oil, you know? Another 40% in lard is saturated fats, but you know, like that's a better percentage than butter, for example. So, you know, watch your portion sizes, eat a vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us learned from Scott Pilgrim versus the World, fat doesn't make you fat, bread makes you fat. So sorry about it.
Put the lardo on the bread. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I want that.
Yeah.
I want it desperately.
Also, yeah, treats are nice. Hey.
Treats are great. we do have a couple numbers for you.
Yes. Okay, so As of 2005, one of the traditional producers of Lardo, the town of Colonnada, was making less than a ton per year. Or I read different numbers. Some were about 10 times that, but not a whole lot at any rate. I will say that the town at that point only had about 300 residents, and only some 14 of them directly involved in production of Lardo. Though certainly it is now an agro-tourism destination. And even during the off-season, you can apparently get tastings and tours from producers.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. It's apparently beautiful to drive up there. There is a Lardo festival there every August with wine and beer and live music and Lardo in absolutely everything, including the chocolates.
Yes.
I read about some like Lardo like donuts, like basically like a kind of stuffed fried pastry with Lardo inside it.
Oh. Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm in.
Another town famous for it, Arnad, which is further up in the north of Italy, makes only 300,000 kilos a year, though apparently more locals produce it privately. They also have a Lardo festival every August. 2023 was its 54th year, and they host some 50,000 visitors every year.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
I couldn't find a lot about these festivals, if anyone has been.
Please.
Oh, yes.
We need you. Oh, yes. Well, we do have quite the history for you.
Oh, we do, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, Spencer.
Yes, thank you.
And yes, if you have listened to any of our pork-based, meat-based, dairy-based, really pretty much every episode we talk about, then you know that for as long as humans have been kicking around, we've been looking for ways to preserve stuff, especially pre-refrigeration. Mm-hmm. And pork is not at all exempt. And in fact, because of this whole thing, is even involved in several celebrations, holidays around the world because of the practice of slaughtering pigs in the winter, eating what you could, and then cutting, hanging, curing, and preserving the rest. And something like a cellar, typically, to be eaten throughout the winter. And then you'd have the springtime festival where you'd have more pig.
Yeah.
Yes, and lardo is a part of that history. However, the origin of lardo is not at all agreed upon and largely lost to time. Some argue that it might trace all the way back to ancient Rome when people were looking to preserve pork and arrived at something lardo-like as part of that. It was a quick hit of calories when food was scarce or too expensive, which I understand, but I was also kind of like, it also seems like such a luxurious thing to me, but...
Yeah. Attitudes have changed a bunch, are like sort of rotated through changes over time.
Right. Yeah. Which we are going to talk about. Mm-hmm. Early on, folks discovered that marble acted as something like a natural cellar when it came to pork fat. I would love to know more about this.
I tried to look into it and I couldn't find anything really.
I know. They were just kind of like, they figured it out. I was like, ooh, but how? marble basins believed to be used in lardo making dating back to the 17th century have been discovered in Italy, and some 19th century colonnata buildings are decorated with artwork showcasing ancient meat curing practices. So it's from the 19th century, but it hints that it's been going on a lot longer than that.
Yeah. In modern times, these basins or casks of marble can be huge, like 6 feet long, holding many slabs of lardo, all the way down to personal sized. The marble is light tight, which, as I said, is important for preventing yellowing and also, you know, if it's light tight, then there's a better idea that like too much oxygen isn't going to be getting in. But yeah, like just breathable enough to let the cure work. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And one of the reasons this might have come about is just because marble was nearby. So speaking of Colonnata, that is where one of the most famous lardos is said to have originated. The name is probably a big hint. Sometime uh-huh. in the 1800s, Lardo di Colonnata. And back then, when Lardo was first made, Colonnata was a small village near a marble quarry.
Yeah, Colonnata is a hamlet just up the mountain from Carrara, which is famous for its white marble quarries. It's where, like, Michelangelo famously sourced his marble.
So, the marble was used to make the lardo, something previously discovered to have preservative qualities and used with other meats, and the lardo was used to feed the miners who did the laborious work of mining the marble. Mm-hmm. Researchers looking into this think that early lardo was seasoned only with salt, ground pepper, fresh rosemary, and garlic, chopped garlic, I think. However, at least according to what I read, it wasn't until the 1980s that lardo from that region spread from the area and started to be sold at markets throughout Italy. And then word got out, and from there, it slowly built a market worldwide. Though, it did have some ups and downs. More teasers for what is to come.
Oh, yeah. Because, all right, there were a bunch of different things going on here. Apparently, leaner breeds of pigs from the United States were introduced to Italy post-World War II, and lardo sort of fell out of fashion even there, especially as economic booms granted access to more desirable cuts of meat with more meat in them. The dip in popularity also coincided with industrialization, pulling young people out of small towns where lardo was traditionally produced and into cities. In the 1990s, the European Union even tried to put a stop to traditional marble curing of lardo, saying it was unhygienic. And like the ruckus of protests from small producers might have actually put Lardo like back on the map or plate, I suppose, is the case maybe. The eventual ruling was that the producers have to like steam clean the marble in between batches, but otherwise they're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, a number of European Union legal fusses ensued. Colonnata producers could not apply for a protected designation of origin because the pork used to make their lardo actually comes from Parma, and for a PDO, you have to have the whole production locally. However, they could apply for a protected geographical indication, which is a little bit looser. According to the Washington Post in an article from 2003, in its petition, Colonnata said its lard was made only in the hamlet between an altitude of 500 meters and 650 meters above sea level and cured for 6 months exclusively in cannelloni vats with proper ingredients. They were like awaiting a ruling and awaiting a special trademark upon that ruling of a pink pig and a pair of jagged peaks set on a green diamond shield.
Ooh.
Which like they, that. yeah, which they got in 2004. So good for them.
Hey, yeah.
meanwhile, Lardo di Arnaud got a PDO in 1996. It is produced by only three farms in the town.
Wow. Well, in our more modern times, and perhaps more outside of Italy.
No, they're as well, a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Well, Lardo's popularity has been contingent on people's changing views of fat, views that were coming from often biased scientific papers and experts. We have discussed this at length.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredibly popular in the UK prior to World War II, for instance. But if you listen to any of our episodes around sugar, you'll know that that's when there was this big push against fat and the purported damage it did to the human body.
Yeah, and this mindset lasted all the way up through the 2000s, like the 20-aughts or so. I read a few rather breathless explainers from the time, like from like just after the turn of the century, about, you know, like discussing this attitude towards fat. The previously mentioned Washington Post piece from 2003, which was written by one Daniel Williams, by the way, started out with, when Americans think of the Mediterranean diet, they think of freshness, lightness, olive oil, salads, and vegetables. They don't particularly think of a block of pig fat soaked for 6 months in a marble box packed with salt, rosemary, garlic, and spices. Yet Italians go wild over lard. The sight of svelte diners swooning over a mountain of lard runs counter to everything that Italian food has come to represent worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
actually, that was like a couple paragraphs down. The lead was kind of this like story of an American tourist being like, this lardo is good, but do you have like a lean version?
Oh, dear.
and the confused shopkeep being like, no, it's fat. It's made of fat. Fat is what
right.
it is.
right.
Anyway, yeah. There was also a concept of vegetable-based fats being a healthier replacement for animal-based fats going back to like the early 1900s. And this was partially an industrial era marketing push. As vegetable fats became cheaper to mass produce, think of products like Crisco, a hydrogenated vegetable oil. That is an oil that's been treated to be solid at room temperature, which was being pushed as more digestible than animal fats like lard. Like there are actual advertisements from the time of like for like donuts that were made with Crisco. And it was like, mom says they're more digestible. I say they're swell.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that whole thing is also where we wound up with a lot of partially hydrogenated vegetable oil products, aka trans fats, which in like the 20-teens, researchers realized were actually bad.
Yeah, so it goes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I mean, save our motto.
Yep.
That's what we say.
Mm-hmm.
In recent years, as opinions around good fats and bad fats have changed, so too has Lardo's reputation. On top of that, the nose-to-tail movement's popularity has further boosted Lardo's profile, and it is having a bit of a moment.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of the articles I read were like. Lardo's living it up right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that, I don't know, man, like reading some of these articles, especially from the early 2000s, was weird and really eye-opening, because I think that the attitude towards body positivity has also changed so much in these 20-ish years, which is great. Heck yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a number of these articles opened up with like insults using the word lard, referring to human people. And that is an unimaginable way for me to open an article right now. Like I would simply not do that. And because it's like obvious that that's a bad thing that one should not do at this juncture. Right. And yeah, just, I don't know. It's, I'm really happy for a number of reasons. One of them being the greater sum of human health, that, that we're approaching nutrition with a more, with a better understanding of how some of these ingredients, affect our bodies. But also just like, whoo, yeah, yeah. Like what a nicer world if we're being less judgmental about people's bodies, as I hope is becoming the case more and more so every day.
Yes, agreed. Agreed. And you know, I haven't had it, but I really want some.
I don't want tomato, so next time I see it, I am texting you a photo of the menu immediately. Yeah.
Immediately, Lauren. This is very important. And listeners, again, if you have been to these festivals, if you have recipes, if you just had a good dish and want to describe it to us and make us have cravings.
Yes.
We like that too.
Oh, heck yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
But that's about what we have to say on Lardo for now.
It is. We do already have some listener mail for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that. Mm-hmm. And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with a listener mail. I want to do like a Hills Are Alive because your mountains, summer mountains description was so good. But I can't spin around because we've already said that that's a disaster.
Oh, no. You have way too many costume pieces in that room. Yeah.
There is costumes and wires all about.
Yeah. Yeah. Hazards.
It's precarious. But, you know. So I compensated. I compromised.
You did.
Yes. Well, we have a lot of you have written about, in some way or another, about chowder, which is great.
Yes.
So we have two messages about that today.
Okay.
Randall wrote, I enjoy listening to you all while I am cooking. Hmm. I used to have neighbors who would have a chowder cook-off every year. I was able to participate 4 years in a row. It was great fun, just four of us cooking since they just had four burners. We would be there trash talking to each other while finishing our chowders and trying to convince the people to vote for our own chowders. Over the years, I made a salmon chowder, a classic PA German chicken corn chowder, a classic clam chowder, and a white chocolate chowder, which I won the Better Than Sex award. I recommend more people trying it. A great party.
Oh, wow.
That sounds so fun.
Right? Oh, heck.
Chowder and trash talk.
Yeah. And what a great spread of different chowders, too. Like the classic clam to the salmon to the Pennsylvania German chicken corn chowder. Oh, man. Heck. Mm-hmm. White chocolate. I don't even know what white chocolate chowder is. I need to look further into this.
It was clearly good.
Yeah.
Award winning.
Right?
I love this. Oh my gosh. I can imagine this in my own friend group deteriorating into nothing is edible, but I still think we'd have a good time.
Yeah. I feel like in my friend group, it would need to be everyone prepared their chowders ahead of time, brought them in like a crock pot kind of situation. Mm-hmm. The trash talking could occur there.
Yeah.
But
I think that's important.
But I think after the soup was done.
Right. Yeah, I'm envisioning quite a mess.
Yeah.
But this also sounds fun if it's something your friend group can pull off.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Oh, yeah. Especially like standing around one four-burner stove. Heck, I don't think.
And I feel like there must have been competition about which burner you got.
Oh, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. Oh, I bet. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love this.
Yes.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Christine wrote about clams. All right. I have no doubt there are many, many New Englanders writing in about this, but just in case, attempting to gather clams at high tide is a diabolical form of punishment, sure to result in, at the very least, a complete drenching if attempted. Clams are bottom-dwelling creatures. They either live on the bottom of the seabed or even burrow into it. Thus, gathering them is really only possible at low tide. Because of stupid white people overfishing, most places have strict catch limits on how many clams you can take, and some places even require you to get a permit. I haven't done this for ages, but when I was a child, we would often gather an Australian species of clam called peepees? Pippis? Sure. They are small burrowing clams, so they have to be dug up. You look for air holes in the sand at low tide, then gently dig around the bubble or dig your foot into the sand. The tiny hands and feet of children are ideal for this because it's very easy to break the shells. And I have absolutely no idea what New Englanders' problem was, insisting tomatoes have no place with clams. Your typical tomato ketchup would indeed be gross, but a pasta based on a peepees, fresh tomatoes, shallots, and fresh herbs is delicious.
Oh, that does sound delicious.
Pippies?
Oh, my gosh.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, Christine, you can let us know.
I could have looked it up.
Oh, dear. That's always hit or miss. Yeah. I feel, I agree with you, Christine, but I feel that it's a very specific chowder thing. It's not a clam can never be with tomatoes. It's that in their minds, the chowder doesn't have tomatoes.
Doesn't have tomatoes. But I mean, but there was a lot of, there was also a lot of, I mean, honestly, really racist, like anti-Italian sentiment going on in kind of popular culture at the time. And the idea that tomatoes were a thing that they were bringing over, even though they were a Native American product.
So
that might have had something to do with it. We need to look further into this.
Also, I responded to Christina. I was like, if I was a kid, I would have loved this.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Digging up of the clams.
Yeah. Oh, well, like I'm allowed to go out and mess with the wildlife?
Yes.
Great. That's
And then I can eat this later?
Yeah. Oh, goodness. And now that you mention it, I totally have seen on beaches little burrowing clams like this that, yeah, you just see the little air bubble peek up when the wave rushes out. And then you're like, oh, there's a shell down there.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've seen them too. Now I know. I'm just kidding. Clams, you're safe from me. I, like Anakin Skywalker, avoid sand. Don't like it.
Do another. Okay. All right. Rocky beaches for Annie. Sure. Yeah.
Well, then maybe I would have fit in up here in New England. But yes, I also like your description of a diabolical form of punishment.
Yes, yes. I assumed that something like that was the case, but right, having no practical experience, thank you so much for informing us.
Yes, thank you. thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taino, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.